KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW Seattle, I'm Marcy Silman, and this is Weekday. Coming up later this hour, Nancy Pearl joins us. We're going to talk about armchair travel for those of us who don't exactly have a vacation, get a vicarious thrill. Congress did some traveling. They adjourned last week for their annual August recess. Lawmakers accomplished a few things before the adjournment, but certainly not everything on the agendas. CBS Capitol Hill News producer Jill Jackson joins us. Hello again, Jill.
Hi, Marcy.
So my big question is it a vacation or is it do the congressional representatives return to their districts to work?
You know, sometimes it's a mix of both. I mean, there are some lawmakers who tend to go out and you don't hear from them again until they come back, in this case, on September 9th. But there are a lot of lawmakers who go home, and this is their chance to have town hall meetings and hear from their constituents and put some face time in at home. There are others, like the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, who's facing a tough re-election fight in 2014, who went home and just over this past weekend had a major political event where he gave speeches at fancy farms, as did two of his opponents, both a primary challenger and a Democratic challenger. You have others like the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, who is planning a multi-state tour to fundraise. And that's another aspect. Lawmakers really take advantage of these long periods to rack up some money. And they can do that with everything from Beyonce concerts to in the Speaker's case, he typically does a lot of golfing events.
Golfing fundraisers or just mm-hmm. golfing with people. Well, as I'm thinking back over sort of headlines over the summer since you and I have been talking, the thing that most sticks out as an accomplishment was to cap the student loan rates. What other major achievements can these representatives point to when their constituents say, hey, what have you guys been doing there?
I think in the House, we've heard a lot lately, as we've been asking the Speaker that very question in press conferences. You know, this is on track to be the least productive Congress, in decades. And the last Congress, with the same leadership, was the least productive. This is set to beat that. The Speaker has said, well, you know, we're not about doing legislation. If anything, we should be repealing legislation and measured by how many laws we repeal. That the American people think government already does too much. So it's not concerning them, even though there is so much left on their to-do list for the rest of the year, including raising the nation's debt limit, doing its basic function of keeping government operating and funded, which they will have to do by September 30th. And as we've discussed, they only have 9 days left of work when they get back to do that in September, and a lot of those aren't even full days. So, at this point, the accomplishments are slim. You know, of course, the Senate can point to passing their major immigration bill. But they've done zero appropriations bills, which fund the government on the Senate side. The House has only done four. So there's really not a lot that they can point to.
I'm interested to hear that the Speaker of the House says their job is to repeal laws. Mm-hmm. Do we need to pay them for that? Just sort of a question I have. But you mentioned that Mitch McConnell's out campaigning. NPR actually had a very interesting story with a lot of audio from these events that he was appearing at. What are they campaigning on? I mean, what are their laurels upon which they ask American voters to reelect them?
You know, at this point, it may not be about specific accomplishments. It's more, again, as we've seen in the past, really two election cycles, this very anti-Washington Washington line that both Democrats and Republicans are using. And it's especially, in Mitch McConnell's case, very tough since he has been the leader of the Republican establishment in Washington. And, you know, in some ways he could go out there and promote the fact that at the end of the day, with all of these major fights we've had on Capitol Hill over the debt limit, over back in the day over payroll tax, which took us right up to Christmas a couple of years ago, you know, Mitch McConnell is always a major player in closing the deal. Often we joke on Capitol Hill that, you know, gosh, just when is this going to be over? Well, we need to get Biden and McConnell in a room, and then, you know, and then they'll seal the deal and find some solution when there are no solutions in sight. There's really no incentive politically for him to tout that he's that guy in the back room who brokers the deals, because that is exactly what many Americans have said they don't like about Washington in the recent years.
We're talking with Capitol Hill News, CBS Capitol Hill News producer Jill Jackson. One of the things that's been interesting to watch, and you and I have talked about that, is the Republican Party itself. And Boehner has been criticized by sort of mainstream Republicans for not being able to keep his troops in order, to actually give them marching orders or get them all on board with whatever they want to be doing. And so a lot of the impasse in Washington doesn't necessarily, well, it does come from Democrats versus Republicans, but also Republican infighting within its party. And so do you see that there's any move to coalesce around particular issues?
At this point, I see some movement among House Republicans that they want to do something on immigration. So many more Republicans have become comfortable with the idea of granting some sort of citizenship, for instance, to children who were brought here by their parents, not necessarily by their own choice. They've talked a lot about different things that they would like to do on immigration. That being said, before really any major compromises are going to happen on immigration, you have the spending and debt fights and all of that. And the question is, how much political capital will Speaker Boehner have to use in those fights to prevent launching us back into an extreme economic turmoil? If, for instance, the government shut down, or if the nation hit its borrowing limit and couldn't pay its debts, Speaker Boehner has made clear that he does not, he is really not willing to allow things to go that far, and will eventually broker some kind of deal. He's been willing to pass it with Democrats in the past if need be. He said that he does not want to do that on immigration, but so he's trying this long, slow, step-by-step approach there. But I think the question is, how much damage will be done within the Republican Party on these spending fights we have in the fall, and will that hurt the momentum that has been building for something on immigration?
Who rivals Boehner as a leader of congressional Republicans?
You know, I think one thing that's interesting is there's no obvious person. You know, back a couple years ago, there were a lot of fights between Speaker John Boehner and his number two, the majority leader, Eric Cantor. Mm-hmm. Eric Cantor was the one who, you know, he's a little younger. He's sort of the next generation of Republicans. He spends a lot of time out fundraising. He was working very hard when the Tea Party Republicans arrived in Congress in 2010 to appeal to them, whereas the Speaker is a little more old school. And that caused, he was very, you know, backroom deal Republican. Mm-hmm. That caused a lot of tension, especially among their staffs. Their staffs did not get along well at all. The staffers in question, though, have now left, and things have very much improved in terms of their relations, and it does not seem that Majority Leader Eric Cantor is working against the Speaker, as it seemed in some ways at times a couple years ago. Now, then you have lots of leaders who don't necessarily have enough power, but enough to gum up the works for the Speaker. That would be Justin Amash, who is a very libertarian-thinking congressman from Michigan. He led an amendment that GOP leaders really did not want to pass that would tie the NSA's hands in terms of these spying programs we've learned about lately. He is one that goes around making all kinds of trouble for GOP leadership and rallying sort of the 30 30 Republicans or so who are consistently no or very skeptical of the GOP leadership agenda. He's a major player in that realm. And then on immigration, you have Raul Labrador of Idaho, who, you know, is at this moment, he's kind of playing all sides. He's himself Hispanic. He represents a conservative state. He was elected in the Tea Party wave of 2010. He was part of a bipartisan group that was negotiating a deal in the House, but he left. Now he is kind of going back to the more conservative side, but he's a major player in this, and I think one that GOP leaders will, and especially Speaker Boehner, will have to pay attention to as immigration goes forward.
Do you see a similar internal split in the Democratic Party?
There is, especially in the House, it doesn't get as much attention because the minority party in the House just doesn't have as much power. But, you know, there's been tension and competition between Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and the number two among Democrats, Steny Hoyer. A lot of people think that in some ways, Pelosi may not decide to retire until it's clear that she would get to pick her successor rather than allow Steny Hoyer to take the speakership. And, you know, this is something, they were interns together. No one exactly knows why they have such a rivalry, but for years there was the fact that Pelosi was just a little more on the liberal side and Steny Hoyer was more of a blue dog, fiscal conservative Democrat. They did have a different vision, and yet when Democrats took power, Hoyer worked very hard with Pelosi on health care and helped get that pass. Folks thought that that might help mend some fences, but it's clear that there's still a desire for him to not necessarily take her place. I think she would like to pick her successor.
Fascinating. While Congress is away, do you get to take a vacation, Jill?
You know, at some point I will, probably the week before Labor Day. But at this point, we have to monitor what they're doing out in the states at the same time.
Jill Jackson is Capitol Hill news producer for CBS. She's been a frequent guest this summer on Weekday. Thanks once again.
Thank you.
I'm Marcy Silman. This is Weekday.
If you want to have an adventure this summer, there's no need to take a newfangled road trip. Just go old school and pick up a book. Librarian Nancy Pearl joins us to talk about armchair travel in a moment.
Hi, this is Jack Spear with NPR News. You've heard us say it many times, and it's still true. You are the public in public radio. Everything you hear on KUOW is only possible with your support. So if it's been a while since you've made a gift to KUOW, please renew your support today. It's easy. Go online to KUOW.org. And thank you.
It's going to be a warm one in Seattle. It's sunny. It's 72 degrees right now, and the forecast says we're going to get up to 85 this afternoon. Tomorrow, it's more sun with a high of 86. I'm Bernard Ouellette. It's 1020.
From KUOW, this is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman. Some people are lucky enough to be traveling this summer, and some of us are not. Some of us are having a staycation. Some of us are not. But even if we're working, it means we can still read a book and send our imaginations on great journeys, and that's the wonder of literature. And librarian Nancy Pearl is here once again, this time taking your calls on the subject of armchair travel. And Nancy, you've written many of in your series of Book Lust, but Book Lust to Go is specifically
right
about armchair travel. I think over the years that I've known you, this particular subject is very dear to your heart.
It is. And I actually love the subtitle of this, which is Recommended Reading for Travelers, Vagabonds, and Dreamers. And
I think I'm in the dreamer
category. And I'm in the dreamer category, but I would love to be either in the vagabond or the traveler category.
Well, you are traveling early this fall, so you get to go away.
Yes.
I'm going to have to dream for a little while more. If you have a question or a recommendation of a great armchair travel book that just took you someplace beyond where you ever thought you could go, 206-543 1-800-586-9206-543-KUOW or email us weekday at KUOW.org. And I think a place that I'm not likely to end up unless something in my life changes is Africa. I have had this dream of going to the French part of Africa and, you know, sort of, and now they're, it just seems like it's a little more difficult maybe than.
Yeah. And actually there's a wonderful armchair travel book about traveling in North Africa.
Really?
Yes. And it's by Michael Mushaw and it has the best title ever, which is called, it's called Between Terror and Tourism.
Yeah, I think I'd have the terror part of it.
Yes. And this is a book that's so readable and so, it was written a few years ago, but it's so still so current because of everything that's happening in North Africa. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he talks about going across borders and he has a great line. And he talks about arriving in a totally inhospitable desert locale. The pleasure of being where I had never been before, doing what I had never done, bound for who knew what. I found it all thrilling. And I find it all terrifying.
Me too. So that's why I think, you know, I'm more likely to go someplace tame that isn't about desert. I was watching a television show on PBS recently where a guy took a boat for 3 days to go to Pitcairn Island where... And I thought, well, wow, we can watch it now,
right.
Via technology. But I think there's something about a really good travel, either fiction or nonfiction, that takes you there in a way that even the visual imagery that somebody else shows you doesn't.
Sometimes I think that the visual parts take away from your experience of it, because it's in some ways you're being force-fed those particular views. And so that brings up the whole like war photographers, you know, and how that all plays in. But I think the best armchair travel books are the ones that talk about you as who you are in relation to where you are.
So who you are, meaning who the writer is?
Who the writer is, okay. I think.
And are these always books where you're on the move, or can they just be set in a different place?
I think they can just be set in a different place.
So my nomination for one that was so vivid is Let's Not Go to the Dogs Tonight.
Right. Alexandra Fuller.
And the reason that this, and it's Africa, she grew up in Africa, and I believe she wrote this not in Africa, but the thing that was very evocative. She writes about the smell of the place where she lived. And that's still, I read this book at least a decade ago. And that's, it was so vivid. She conjured the place, the colors, the sounds, and the smell of that place where she lived.
Yeah. I think that was her best, memoir in my mind. And the other ones kind of followed on that and had some, you know, really interesting parts. But that, I think, captured, plus it has a great title, Let's Not Go to the Dogs Tonight.
Dina emails to weekday at KUOW.org. Second Sons, S-U-N-S. I don't know who wrote that. Dina, you didn't include that. But she says that there was a part about Nepal that was fascinating to her.
Oh, there's a really wonderful mystery that's set in Tibet.
And really?
in a prison of Tibetan monks. The Tibetan monks are all imprisoned by their Chinese, and there's a murder there. And it's just, and the person who's killed is an American, and that's really good too.
Now, there is another mystery series that's set in Bangkok. I can't remember the author, but you know who I'm talking about. Bangkok 8 was the first.
Yes, John Burdett.
Yep. Now, as you can see, this is what I read, mysteries. But now that's about as much traveling as I do, is I'll find the mystery that's set.
Right. A great way of doing that. I'm, you know, John Burdett, you have to have a really strong stomach for the John Burdett books.
Yeah, they're gory and violent.
They're gory and totally, totally gory and totally violent.
But interesting descriptions of Bangkok.
Oh, yeah, you feel like you know it. And there's another series set in Bangkok, too. Oh, gosh. He has a couple of series. All right, I'll think of what
so
his
you'll think
name
of
is.
Them. We're talking about armchair travel, and before I get too carried away with all the mysteries set in other places that I read, we want to hear from you at 206-543-KUOW. Nancy Pearl's with us, and Anne on Vashon, you are on the air.
Hi, I have two novels, or not novels, I guess memoirs, to suggest if you're looking for fun in travel reading.
Fun is
Nancy,
good.
Nancy, I'm sure you are very familiar with both. One of them is by Emily Kimbrough and
oh, yes.
Cornelia Otis Skinner, Our Hearts Were Young and Gay.
Yes, I love those. And I so wish that somebody would bring them back in print. Or at least make them even available. I mean, I would love them back in paper so I could put them on my bookshelves. But those were so great about these young, high-spirited Americans who go off to Europe. And then Emily Kimbrough went on and wrote a ton of other books.
Right. But that one is just precious.
Yes.
And what era was their trip? In the 1920s?
I think... Okay... Was it the 1920s? The 1920s or the 1930s? Maybe the 1920s was too soon after the First World War to do that kind of, you know, high-spiritedness.
Right. Well, here's another book that you know, Mark Twain's Innocents Abroad.
Yes. Yeah. Those are, yes, absolutely.
And thanks for both of those suggestions. And is that one of the earlier armchair travel books, Mark Twain?
Yes, I would say so. But there's a great book about Ibn Battuta, the great traveler, called Travels with a Tangerine.
Yes, I have heard of that one.
Which is great fun.
We have a lot of emails.
Oh, good.
So you can call, though, as well at 1-800-289-5869. Nancy Pearl's our guest. We're traveling via armchair this morning on weekday. Nan and Shoreline suggests Oldie But Goodie, Desert Queen, The Extraordinary Life of Gertrude Bell, Adventure Advisor to Kings, Ally of Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes, and I really like, that's by Janet Wallach, and there's another one called Gertrude Bell, Queen of the Desert, which I liked even better than the Janet Wallach. I owned them both. Gertrude Bell was a fascinating woman and a traveler. And speaking of that, there's a book coming out in September by Scott Anderson called Lawrence in Arabia, which is a new biography not only of T.E. Lawrence, but of the people who were around the young men of his age group who were there from England and Germany.
How
just fascinating.
It is fascinating. Yeah. Lisa recommends the Ukimwi Road by Dervla Murphy. And then she said, Dervla Murphy is wonderful. Anything she writes is great.
My favorite one by Dervla Murphy is she's a bicyclist. So when I was doing all that bicycling,
yes.
I just love to read Dervla Murphy's books. And so in Book Lust to Go, I included many
Dervla Murphy. So just get a copy of Book Lust to Go. And if you like that, you can sort of go through them all. Which is a nice thing to do if you have a lot of time in the summer. You just start and keep going.
Yeah. I mean, two of the books that I found that I just have loved over the last couple of years are, interestingly, both set in South America. And at this point, I don't think I'll ever get to South America. I don't know why, but I just sort of feel like I won't. But one of them is Sarah Wheeler's Travels in a Thin Country. And it's her travels in Chile, and she is just this intrepid traveler. And she'll meet somebody at a bar, and then they'll go off for 3 days in the desert. And but reading her books, both the one about the South Pole and this one, Travels in a Thin Country, you really get to know her as a person. But I felt like I have a daughter who's a bit too adventurous for my taste, And when I was reading Sarah Wheeler's book about her travels in Chile, I kept thinking, oh, her poor mother, you know, to get these things. So that's a wonderful armchair travel book. And the second one has a Seattle connection. And unfortunately, his other books, it's by a man named Moritz Thompson. His father, at the turn of the 20th century, began Krusty's, that baking
thing. Yes,
so
yes.
Fabulously wealthy. But Moritz Thompson joined the Peace Corps, the first group of Peace Corps volunteers in his 40s, and was sent to Ecuador and stayed, was there for 4 years and then bought a farm and lived in Ecuador. And one of his books is called The Saddest Pleasure, A Journey of Two Rivers, which in his late 50s, and he was not a well man at that time, he traveled around South America. And this is just so absolutely beautifully written. And it's one of those books that when I was doing all the research for Book Plus to Go, you know, I would get books from the library and I would read them and all that. But some of them I just had to own. And The Saddest Pleasure is one of those books. And he also wrote a book called Living Poor, which is just so interesting about the Peace Corps, being in the Peace Corps. And it's one of the best Peace Corps memoirs. I mean, I think.
So it's Moritz?
Moritz, M-O-R-I-T-Z, Thompson, T-H-O-M-S-E-N. And you can usually find The Saddest Pleasure, which is out of print. You can usually find it. I mean, I found it several times at local used bookstores.
Nancy Pearl's with us here on Weekday. 543-5869, 206-543-KUOW. Hi, Mike in Auburn. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Hi. I listen to you a lot. I love your show. Travels with Charlie by John Steinbeck.
Yeah.
Yes. But when I found out that he had, that wasn't exactly a memoir, that he had novelized a lot of that and made up a good deal of it, that kind of changed my feeling about it a little bit.
Oh, I didn't know that. Now that changes mine. You're breaking my heart.
I'm sorry.
You can still like
the
book.
You can still like it, but
I hope he didn't make up the part about washing his clothes, you know, while he drove by putting them in a trash can and letting the road vibrate.
That's a good one. That is good.
That sounds too real to be made up to me.
Oh, Mike, we aren't here to disillusion you. Thanks for your call. Travels with Charlie, and of course, Charlie was his dog.
Yes.
His little poodle, right? Something like that, a poodle mix. Carol recommends In an Antique Land, History in the Guise of a Traveler's Tale by Amitav Ghosh.
Yes.
Am I saying the name right?
Yes, I believe so.
Michael has a couple of recommendations. The Lost Cyclist by David V. Herlihy, the epic tale of an American adventure and his mysterious disappearance, about a man who retraces an around-the-world bike trip. And then Colin Fletcher's The Man Who Walked Through Time, nonfiction, about a man who walks the length of the bottom of the Grand Canyon. Well, that would be interesting.
Yeah, yes. That's a classic.
Wow.
That's a classic.
And Harry says, I've heard that mysteries are fantasies about a city or the city, while spy novels are fantasies about tourism, and epic fantasies are about tourism through fictional spaces. I like that, Harry. He mentioned mysteries, I'm so Pavlovian. Donna Leon's mysteries, right, set in Venice,
right,
which are very lovely evocations of a way of life in a city, in addition to being mysteries.
What's always been very interesting to me is that those have been translated into many, many, many languages. She writes in English. She's an American. But they're not in Italian.
None.
Because she doesn't want to be recognized.
Wow.
There.
Wow.
Yeah. That's what somebody from the
public
church told me.
But she lives in Venice, right?
She lives in Venice.
And
right.
What's really great about these, I mean, there is a mystery in all of them. That's almost besides the point in this book. It's really about this man and his wife and his two teenage kids and what it's like to be a Venetian.
Yeah. I was going to say it's almost sociological.
Right.
It's, the mystery. I think she has gotten less and less interested in mysteries, in the mystery itself, and more interested in the political situation in Italy, what it means to be a Venetian, the unsuccess of the unsuccessful in many ways melding of the different, of Rome and of Venice into one country and its unworkableness. The best books really give you something. Every book gives you something to think about. But the best books, I think, really set you on this new way of looking at the world.
Well, her books actually make me want to go to Venice to see beyond what what tourists see, mm-hmm. which I guess is a mark of a success of a sort of an armchair travel.
And it was because of her books that I developed a strong taste for Prosecco. because Brunetti, Guido Brunetti, is always having some Prosecco.
And Brunetti is the inspector.
Right.
Terry in Bellingham, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So back in the day, I'll give away my age, I guess, if I talk about this, but I used to take bicycle trips back in 1972 is my first one. Back then, you couldn't even buy a bicycle helmet. You had to get those old leather ones that the bicycle racers got. And a few years later, I went from 72, 75, 76, I took all kinds of trips. But one of my favorite travel books has nothing to do with bicycling, but just favorite travel book was The Great Railway Bazaar, Paul Theroux.
Mm-hmm.
Love his humor as well as his descriptions of people and places.
Yeah. Was that his first book?
That was his first travel book, I believe.
Yeah.
And I think it's still his best travel book. I mean, that's another book that that if that doesn't make you have at least the little bittiest urge to get up and go to India and take a train, then I'm sure, you know, maybe you're suffering from too much world weariness or something, because it just is, it's just fabulous. But his new book, he has a brand new book out about Africa, which he says is going to be his last trip to Africa. But the one that came out before that, which I'm going to try to find the title of, I think is just as good. But because he wrote The Great Railway Bazaar when he was a relatively young man, and this new book, he has sort of lived through a lot personally, and the world has lived through a lot. So it's a much more cynical and sad book, this new one. And plus, I think Africa is a difficult place to travel in these days. So I'm going to try to find that title.
She's going to look it up. Terry, thanks for that suggestion. Paul Theroux's The Great Railway Bazaar. We're talking about armchair travel this hour with Nancy Pearl, librarian and reader extraordinaire. Our phone number is 1-800-289-5869, 1-800-289-KUOW or 543-KUOW. This is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman.
74 degrees in Seattle under a sunny sky. Forecast says we're going to get up to 85 this afternoon.
Support for KUOW comes from Youth Care, providing education and employment training, shelter, and housing programs to help get homeless youth off the streets and preparing for life. More information at www.youthcare.org.
Hi, I'm Oren Alney. On the next To The Point, Detroit's $18 billion bankruptcy has focused attention on other financially troubled cities and counties from Alabama to California. In worst-case scenarios, should pensioners or Wall Street bondholders get paid first? Should Washington provide bailouts when cities were on the brink? Is Detroit a special case or part of a pattern? Next time on To The Point from Public Radio International.
That is just a little over 30 minutes away here on KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm Bernard Ouellette. It's 10:39. An update on the embassy closures in the news at 11.
From KUOW, this is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman, and Nancy Pearl is with us once again, and we're talking about armchair travel. Taking your calls at 206-543-5869. And we were, when last we left you in that cliffhanger, Nancy was looking up Paul Theroux's book that she wanted to recommend.
And it's called Dark Star Safari, Overland from Cairo to Cape Town. Now, that just gives me a little shiver of pleasure, thinking of that Cairo to Cape Town, so romantic.
And also huge.
A huge swath. Swath of Africa. So here's some wonderful quotes. This is how Paul Theroux begins this book. All news out of Africa is bad. It made me want to go there, though not for the horror, the hot spots, the massacre and earthquake stories you read in the newspaper. I wanted the pleasure of being in Africa again. And then here's another good example. This is also of his feelings and his writing. This is from the first chapter as well. I was heading south in my usual traveling mood, hoping for the picturesque, expecting misery, braced for the appalling. Happiness was unthinkable, for although happiness is desirable, it is a banal subject for travel. Therefore, Africa seemed perfect for a long journey. Isn't that fabulous?
It is fabulous, but it's also the writing of somebody who's seen a lot.
Yes.
And done a lot.
Yes. And he was a Peace Corps volunteer in Botswana. So, you know, he's seen it back from the 60s, maybe the 70s, to the present.
Do you consider Pico Iyer a travel writer?
I do. I think he's a very different kind of travel writer, but I think, yes.
Okay.
Well, I would.
We're talking with Nancy Pearl, and now I guess you guys have all woken up and you've loaded our phone line, so we go to Olympia. Hi, Mag, you're on the air.
Hi. There was a book when I read as a young girl in the mid-60s, and I don't remember the name of it, but the author was Richard Halliburton.
Oh, yeah.
And his description of being in the Taj Mahal after closing was just magical, and I still remember the feeling that it made me had to this day.
Yeah, he's a classic travel writer, and I'm not sure even, I wonder if his books are still in print, but let's see, some of his books are The Royal Road to Romance. Maybe that's the one. Does that title sound familiar?
Oh, it's been so long, I don't think I would remember it.
Well, there's a bunch, and he's fun to look up.
Okay, Richard Halliburton, not to be confused with the company Halliburton.
Yes.
Maggie, thanks for that call. We go to Dina next. Hi, Dina.
Hi. I'm calling for two things. One, I had recommended Second Sons but didn't tell you anything about it. And it's about a doctor from Nepal who's invented a surgery together with an American to remove cataracts from people's eyes. And they've trained other doctors, and they've given more than 2 million people their sight and trained so many others. And the part about Nepal is amazing. So that was Second Sons. But I'm really interested right now. I'm probably going to Southeast Asia, namely Laos, Cambodia, and North Vietnam, northern part of Vietnam, to Sapa in the spring. And I'm looking for books to read about the area. I've read Colin Cotterill's Mysteries set in Laos. The first one's called The Coroner's Lunch, which is absolutely amazing. But can you recommend anything else?
Wow. You know, the books that I'm most familiar with about that area are all having to do with the war in the 60s and 70s and the results of the war. So, you know, the killing fields in Cambodia. I will have to think about that because nothing travel-y is coming to mind. But
now she's going to start thumbing through, Dina, so keep listening.
Right.
And it may show up in a few minutes. Thanks for your call. Here's a couple here's one about Vietnam that I'm not sure the name of our emailer, but it's by Luke Nguyen, The Songs of the Sapa. A book that travels through Vietnam, telling personal stories through a culinary tour, amazing recipes of his friends and family that he also visits. So, Luke Nguyen.
And then there's the bicycle book about Vietnam. What is it called? Goodness.
All right, we'll keep going. So Nancy will hunt, and we will peck at phone lines here. Keller and Olympia, you are on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I read a book, could be as long as 20 years ago, but it was called Tracks, and it was about a woman who rode a camel through the Australian outback.
Yes, Robin Davidson. Is her name, R-O-B-Y-N. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You know it.
Yes. Oh,
great.
Yeah. It's a great book.
It really is. I still remember it to this day.
Tracks by Robin Davidson. And Keller, what did you like about it?
I liked the vividness to which she wrote. I really, you know, felt like I was there with her.
And as we were saying, that's one of the hallmarks of when you feel like you're in the head of the writer.
So here's a good Vietnam one.
Okay, Vietnam.
Good background. It's called Sacred Willow, Four Generations in the Life of a Vietnamese Family. And I think it's a friend who had gone bicycling in Vietnam said this was the most enlightening book that she had read about the country.
The title again?
Sacred Willow.
Sacred Willow, Dina. I hope you have a pen there. We're talking books with Nancy Pearl, specifically Armchair Travel, and some of these books are fiction, some of them are memoirs, some of them are actually travel books. Jim in Seattle, you are on the air.
Hi, Nancy and Marcy. I'm a travel writer from Seattle who wrote a book called The Mindful Traveler, but my book that I like best, probably, I love Nick Brown's The Spiritual Tourist, that tells a story about all these ashrams in India and his travels to those places to meet various gurus. And another book that I like that I mention is, well, actually almost all the books of Pankaj Mishra, an Indian writer. I think he's a tremendous writer. And he's got a book called The End of Suffering, which has all these wonderful little anecdotes about butter chicken in northern India and the Himalayas and all kinds of things that really capture the atmosphere of the places in India and the Himalayas.
Well, thank you for both of those suggestions.
And for letting us know about your book, too.
Yes, as well. Karen says, you'd have to go back in time as well as travel, but I'd love to go to Gerald Durrell's Corfu. And then my family and other animals, birds, beasts, yes, and relatives, the Garden of the Gods.
Yeah. I mean, my wish would be to go to India when it was just to see it, when it was still under the Raj. And Paul Scott's The Raj Quartet, there's fiction that just takes you right there. Salman Rushdie's Midnight's Children set during the same time.
That's a beautiful book.
Totally wonderful, both books.
Judith on Friday Harbor says, here are a few favorites, all older. Shooting the Bow, Woman's Voyage Down the Wildest River in Borneo by Tracy Johnston. Redmond O'Hanlon's Into the Heart of Borneo.
Do you remember you and I did a reading from that book. I think that must have been like 20 years ago.
I was thinking Redmond O'Hanlon, that sounds so familiar. And one of my very favorites, Tuning the Rig, A Journey to the Arctic. An expedition in search of humpback whales in the far north becomes a voyage of personal discovery for one apprentice seaman on the tall ship Regina Maris. I read this wonderful, beautiful book full of humor and great writing. Right after I finished it, I found out the author had died shortly after writing it, and I wept for the man I didn't know and yet had come to know through this amazing book. And then in caps, read it, although it may be out of print.
Oh, but that's what we have libraries for.
That's what we have libraries for.
And interlibrary loan.
And interlibrary loan. Nancy Pearl here, and in Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood, Joanne has been on hold. Hi, Joanne. Thanks for your patience. Joanne?
Hi.
The
Colossus of Marusi by Henry Miller is the ultimate tour guide travel book if you're going to Greece.
Oh.
Okay.
Good. Well, better than the Lawrence. Well,
I think she,
yeah, that's okay.
I think she may be gone. We'll go next to Bainbridge Island. Anne, thanks for being with us.
Hello.
Hi, Anne.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to recommend a mystery series that I just stumbled upon recently by Louise Penny, who writes about an inspector in the Sûreté de Québec. They're set in the eastern townships of Quebec, and it's very evocative of the place and the culture and the food of that area of Canada. I can't stop reading them. There's about 8 or 9 of them, and they're quite compelling, and the characters are wonderful. But it's very evocative of the place, like the best mysteries.
You're right about that. Thank you so much, Louise Penny's series.
Inspector Gamache.
That's his name. Chelsea says, I suggest Cutting for Stone by Abraham Verghese and White Tiger by Aravind Adiga. Adija? Adiga. A-D-I-G-A. I felt like I'd traveled to Ethiopia and India reading these books.
Yes, and the book that we talked about a couple weeks ago, the Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie's Americana, which is so evocative of Nigeria. And we're back to Africa.
Yeah, and it's a place that a lot of us don't get to travel. Maybe that's why we think about the books. Our phone number, 206-543-5869. Charisma emails. I have a friend that just recently ended a long-term relationship and now is moving to Madrid. I thought I might get her a book as a going-away present. Any suggestions? Maybe a book about traveling, new adventures.
Oh, so nothing specifically about Spain. You know, there are so many, gosh, there are just too many. there's a book that I really enjoyed called Dress Me in the Temple of Heaven.
Yeah.
Which is not, I don't know if it's exactly appropriate for somebody who's recovering. Yeah. Who's, you know, wants something a little bit more comforting, but, Dervla Murphy, I would go back to Dervla Murphy in the sense that she is like this really, intrepid woman who might be feeling fearful inside, but presents a fearless demeanor. And that's the kind of thing that that I would do. There's a bunch of good books about Spain, many of them having to do with, this is the kind of book I like, but many of them having to do with the effects, the effects of the Spanish Civil mm-hmm. War and how it's still affecting Spanish society today. And, you know, that there's still so many unanswered questions about that war.
And you make me think about Hemingway when you start talking mm-hmm. about that. Adrian says, Yoga for People Who Can't Be Bothered to Do It by Jeff Dyer is a favorite travel memoir.
Yeah, and Jeff Dyer, his books are fun, I think. He's very, they're great. And he's an author that I would recommend.
And
across the board.
Hans emails in with some books about Bosnia. Fools Rush In by Bill Carter, the memoirs of a young man doing humanitarian work during the Bosnian War, later convinced U2 to famously support the cause. Also, Copper and Red Summer by Bill Carter, Hans recommends.
Oh, I have to look those up because, you know, I'm still... But I think the best book about Bosnia is about, well, a couple of great books about Bosnia, but one is about the war itself, and it's called Love Thy Neighbor, A Story of War by Peter Maas, M-A-A-S-S. And then Alexander Hemon, H-E-M-O-N, all of his books deal with, in some ways, I mean, he grew up in Sarajevo and left as a young man during the war, came to the United States. But his new book is a memoir that includes some parts about his childhood and also about what it's like to be an immigrant in the United States. So Alexander Hemon, can't do better than him.
We're back to Bainbridge Island. I think all of you must be listening. Hi, Robin. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. I wanted to suggest Alaska Blues by Joe Upton. He wrote it in the 70s when he was a fisherman in Southeast Alaska and the Inside Passage, and if anybody's been up the Inside Passage in their own boat or in a cruise ship, you know, he really captures what it feels like to be there. And it was just him and his wife and dog on a small boat going up to do salmon fishing and halibut fishing, and it's very evocative of the place and also teaches you a lot about the fisheries. And there's a prologue that explains how fisheries have changed since then. And I just recently read it. It's just a wonderful book.
Alaska Blues.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your call. And as you said that, you reminded me of the book whose title I can't think of, but I know Nancy will know it. When it's Jonathan Rabin's book about the year that his father died and his marriage ended, and he sailed up from Seattle up through BC, and you know what I'm talking
yes,
about.
I
and you're
do.
Nodding. It's great.
It's on my bookshelf at home.
It's a great book. Okay. You listeners, you always know the answer, so email us. And of course, we had that question about books about Laos, so we have gotten help from a listener.
Good.
Cindy says, in preparation for travel to Laos, I'm reading a memoir written by a Hmong woman called The Late Homecomer by Khao Kalia Yang. It documents her extended family's experiences in Laos and the years in refugee camps in northern Thailand. Whether or not one intends to travel to Southeast Asia, the book complexifies the struggles of immigrants to this country, especially policy reform regarding immigrants and refugees. And yes, this is checked out from the Seattle Public Library.
Yeah, that was a wonderful book. It's a book that remained with me a long time after I read it. Not long enough, evidently, because I couldn't think of it.
We're talking about armchair travel and in all its permutations, and we have a few more minutes. So, Marco in Seattle Central District. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. I'd like to recommend two books for motorcycle riders out there. One is The Long Way Round by the actor Ewan McGregor and his friend Charlie Borman, and the other is called Ghost Rider by Neil Peart, who is the drummer for the rock band Rush. Both are long motorcycle journeys and very interesting.
Marco, do you read those on motorcycle trips, or do you read them to get ready for trips?
I read them after taking long motorcycle trips, just because I was inspired by traveling on two wheels and living simply.
Hmm. Well, wow. I would never have thought of that. So thank you for recommending those.
There's a wonderful book called I See by My Outfit by Peter Beagle, who went on to a career in fantasy, or still has a career in fantasy. But this is about a motor scooter trip that he and his best friend took from the East Coast, from New Jersey to Berkeley, because Peter Beagle wanted to see his girlfriend Enid, who was living in Berkeley. And that's I think that's like a forerunner to William Least Heat Moon's Blue Highways, which is another classic.
That's a beautiful book.
Yeah.
Anthony in Maple Valley, hello.
Yeah, hello. I'd like to recommend a book. It is called A Trip to Nowhere, and it's a true story of the Polish civilians, up to 1.5 million that were forcibly deported to slave labor in 1940 by the Soviets. And two of the women featured in the book live in the Seattle area and are both friends of mine. And their experiences in the wastelands of Kazakhstan and then escaping across the Caspian Sea to Persia, being befriended by the Shah of Iran, and then on to Baghdad and Palestine. And these women, who are in their 80s now, wound up in refugee camps from Uganda to all the way to India and modern-day Pakistan. And it's a true story, features several local people, and is also the largest unpunished war crime of the Second World War.
Anthony's recommending A Trip to Nowhere, featuring some locals. Thank you for that. I wanted to just squeeze in Jonathan Rabin's book, Of Course, Hands, Let Me Slap My Head. Passage to Juno. Thank you for having a brain when mine has failed.
And mine.
And sorry, I'm going to end with your book. My all-time favorite summer travel book is The Curve of Time. And you and I have talked about that recently, about a woman and her family in the early to mid-20th century and cruising through the Gulf Islands.
And back in print.
And back. Oh, really? It's a beautiful and evocative book. And actually, you can go there, and it's not very far out of our way. Nancy Pearl, once again, it's just always fun to have you here. Nancy is the author of the Booklust series and hosts Seattle Channel's Booklust television series of author interviews. And Booklust to Go, if you're into armchair travel, that is the volume in the series where you can find many more suggestions than we were able to put together today. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with William Ruckelshaus, and we're going to talk about orcas. That's all coming up on Weekday, produced by Katie Sewell, Jason Pagano, Amina Al-Sadi, and Andy Hurst. Bernard Willett's the engineer. I'm Marcy Silman. Have a great day.
Major League Baseball suspensions in the news in a minute. KUOW-FM Seattle, KUOW-Tumwater, KQOW-Bellingham, and Digital HD Services.
I shall spare you the details of what brought me to Machu Picchu. But it was there that I fell in love for the first time.
A man in love with love. This week on Selected Shorts, from PRI, Public Radio International.
Short stories read over the radio, Tuesday night at 10 o'clock on KUOW 94.9 Seattle.
Support for KUOW comes from the Old West town of Winthrop, Washington, with outdoor recreational opportunities, including the Metow Valley Labor Day Rodeo, August 31st through September 1st, close to Seattle via the scenic North Cascades Highway. More information.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.